Hi, everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and I represent the political center and have on the political right, John Dougal.
Hey, great to be with you.
Good to be with you, John. Good smile today.
It's a summer day.
On the political left, Shireen Gorbani.
Hello, and hi, listeners. Hope you're doing okay in these wild and difficult times.
You both are sporting bright colors today, almost like spring kind of colors.
And I'm in the earthy gray.
What are we going to do? It's a dark time. And let's start internationally and kind of work our way to local. But John, the Israel-Iran war.
Ukraine is not in the news these days.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, Iran and Israel, it's escalating more and more.
I had a time when I was in Jerusalem, staying in an Airbnb, so I'm in a home, and I saw what a safe room looked like. And it just has been
describe it.
Ringing.
For most Utahans, they probably have no idea. You're in a normal apartment,
you know, a living area, couple of bedrooms, a kitchen. And then you have this room that looks like you're stepping into a submarine. The door is kind of this oval thing you have to step over. And you go in and it feels like you're in a safe and you shut the door and it's it has provisions inside it. And it's, you know, I'm assuming the walls are thicker. It has water. It has, fresh oxygen. But it's routine.
So when there's an attack, you just go in there, you sequester in there.
Until the alarms stop.
It's a sad commentary because, you know, we just don't live in that kind of existence.
Yeah. And right now, you know, Israelis are being every day, these alarms going off and going in. I mean, just imagine what that does in your mental health. And Shireen, I'm not trying to do all Israeli side. I'm just trying to give a sense of like what the daily life is like in a major, you know, international city right now, Tel Aviv.
Then you flip over to Iran.
Where the president's tweeting, leave Tehran.
Yeah.
What was he doing?
What is he doing? I guess my sense is that most people that listen along with this show maybe lean towards your politics, Natalie, and some of yours, but probably more towards mine. And I'll just say, I think
there's that token listener out there.
Who keeps emailing us. Thank you, Jason. So I will just say that I think that there's a very serious question about the incompetence of this president, the promises that we were sold around a more peaceful, a more verdant future, mm-hmm. right, with a Trump presidency. But what we have seen is chaos, mm-hmm. darkness, a lack of leadership on the international scale that is only making this country less safe for us. And I'm terrified about what's happening right now in the Middle East. I mean, it was already a catastrophic human rights disaster. And now we are entering into, a deep stage of
Shireen, this is where I differ from you in the sense that I think this is still going on with or without Donald Trump as president. What I see him doing, though, is he fuels it in ways that are really uncomfortable to me. Like when a president of the United States puts out on social media, evacuate Tehran, and then on the other side saying, we have nothing to do with this war. We're not, you know, involved in any way. And it's just... It's so disruptive. It's so over the top. A U.S. president to say, evacuate the city, he's basically saying, you know, we're not coming, but the Israelis are coming and they're going to bomb everything, you know? And it's just...
And part of his agenda, clearly he's in negotiations with Iran. And so I think there's an element where destabilization or weakness of the Iranian government helps him in the negotiations.
Yeah.
And I do think we need to come to some type of agreement in terms of the threat that Iran's government has posed over the decades. But we're living in a world, I mean, you know, some may disagree, but I think there's a lot of merit to this concept, which is if Iran or pick whatever other country in the Middle East lay down their arms, it'd be peace. But if Israel lays down their arms, Israel will be eliminated. And that is the fear for, I think, most Israelis, mm-hmm. is if we don't fight, these countries have said they want to eradicate us. And when you look at the history, over generations, there is some validity to that concern that they have, that they feel like they have to fight or else they will cease to
exist. So they're the two largest militaries in the Middle East. They are going after each other, and they're now talking about, a political assassination in Iran.
A regime change. Iran is, okay. So, I mean, I'll just say that I think that the description you've provided is one that has now led to a place where we have seen the devastation in Gaza with very little real response on the international stage, very little reaction to rein in Israel. Now we're seeing the bombing of television stations in Iran. Like, we're not seeing we're talking about regime change. We are talking about an extended and prolonged war where we continue to consolidate power behind a government that is committing atrocities. We need international leadership here, and it used to be us, and it is not.
This notion, I can't imagine the Israeli intelligence that they have for them to go in and find 9 Iranian nuclear scientists and basically, you know, execute them.
Yeah.
That's pretty dark what's going on. Okay, now let's come overseas back to our country to the No King's Day protest, drawing over 5 million across the U.S., 2,100 cities and towns. Shireen, my son sent me pictures of the Utahns at the protest.
Yeah.
It was a big protest.
It was a big protest.
Yeah. We have big, big blocks, wide, wide streets, and we probably feel 2.5, 3
Estimates
of people.
For the evening rally were close to 10,000. There was a huge protest. I'm sure you saw the images at the University of Utah. Mm-hmm. I happened to be in Moab for work, where 500 people were gathered, which is wild because the population of Moab is 5,000.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're talking about a significant turnout of folks coming out to say we reject this presidency. And I think a pretty interesting split screen was, I think, a very troubling use of our military in a parade that looked quite stupid and very dictatorial and really like giving
empty
Nuremberg vibes, but was empty.
Yeah. John, did your son go to it? I know you have a son that lives in D.C.
No, I don't think he went to it.
Oh, I just wondered if you had any color commentary.
No, I don't have any color commentary. I did notice that some of the soldiers seemed to be enjoying waving to the crowds and stuff like that. And I don't want to, you know, demean the soldiers at all who were there in their role and doing the best they can. It falls flat, you know, this no kings thing. Okay. From my perspective, presidents tend to want to engage in king-like activities. It's not just Trump. We talked about this, about Obama. It's gone on. I mean, you go back to the founding. I think it was George Mason.
I've looked at the data on executive orders signed in the first 100 days. It's off the charts with this president. That's a different kind of king.
But it's been off the chart, president after president after president.
No, it hasn't.
I want to go back.
Okay, so keep going. But I'm just like, evidence that he has different behaviors.
As I recall, George Mason, one of the founders, one of the problems he had and didn't want to sign the Constitution was that he thought presidents would become elected kings.
Mm-hmm.
And I would suggest that he was substantially correct. It ratchets up and up and up. And I see presidents, both parties, over, you know, centuries, engaging in more and more and more heavy-handed approaches, acting more and more like kings. And this is just, unfortunately for me, this is the norm of presidents.
Yeah. Okay?
Some may be more than others.
John, I mean, it's happening.
You go back and look at Obama, and the concern was he was acting like a king.
Look at the numbers. The concern was, but now we actually have someone who is. And I just have to say, I think we would agree here that a big part of the reason this is happening is because we have a completely rudderless and gutless Congress that does almost nothing. So when we have a congressional body that does almost nothing, it really gets very little work done, we see this more and more. But the numbers tell the truth. And Trump has done this at
I was able to call up the numbers thanks to the iPhone. You know, Reagan administration, you know, executive orders, first 100 days, 18. First Bush, 11. Clinton, 13. Second Bush, 11. Obama, 19. Trump, 1.0, 33. Biden, 42. Trump, 2.0, 139.
It's a pretty big
difference. This is maximalist. It's different.
And to me, I just see it as a continuation of the past.
Yeah, it's definitely but it's an outlier what he's done as one measure.
Right, and I'm just saying, this is the tendency of presidents, and this is why I'm a skeptic
of
presidents.
John, because I'm in the political middle, I will say I could pull up similar data on regulations passed, the kind of maximalist regulations in the first year, and Democrats have a lot of regulations that show up, you know, presidential power, if you will.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Hey.
The classic to me, though, if I go back to Obama, it was, I don't have the authority to do that. And then a few years later, I've got a phone and a pen.
Yeah.
So in essence, I'm not going to wait around for Congress. I'm going to just do it anyway, even though I said I didn't have the authority.
Let's go back to
it's a problem on both sides.
To the No King's Day protests and the absolutely tragic shooting that happened in Salt Lake City. This is a Samoan fashion designer that was killed. Afa Alu.
Yeah, lost his life in this.
I know you, Shireen, you've already been down to visit the
yeah.
the makeshift memorial.
I have. Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Well, people are leaving flowers, and there have just been many beautiful statements about this individual's life. It just like makes me want to cry. But what I will say is that I think for me, the thing that is the backdrop here that is so disappointing is the, frankly, some of the statements from our political leaders have failed to meet this moment. And I'm disappointed, honestly, up and down. I'm frustrated that Governor Cox said, you know, this is going to be the worst state to riot. Never once said this is a state founded on religious dissent, on, you know, a different approach to being. And we will protect people's right to express their, you know, freedom of speech. Mm-hmm. And we expect that to happen peaceably. So whether you're coming to disrupt one way or another, you will be held accountable. But we support people's right to protest. That would have been leadership, right? Mm-hmm. I'm frankly frustrated with our mayor saying, this isn't who we are. This is who we are. This was one moment of gun violence in a series of tragic events that happened over this weekend here. And we have lost too many lives to guns in this state. We continue to do so, often suicide. The reality is we live in a violent society. It's getting more violent. And we have a president, we have an infrastructure that frankly condones it. And they condone it by letting January 6th rioters go. They condone it by letting people who have violated the FACE Act, people who attacked sexual and reproductive health centers in violent ways, let them out. We are letting criminals out on our streets and acting like we care about public safety. And frankly, we don't. And I think this is honestly just the beginning, unfortunately.
John, I want to hear you react to that. We're kind of at time in our first segment, but let's hear your reaction to that, because that's a very articulate description of the way Shireen's viewing the world.
And we've talked a lot about our concerns, our shared concerns about the violence and how people are engaging. And I think we'll talk maybe about Minnesota after the break. But this is clearly a tragic event where he was there peaceably to be part of this protest. And whether he was accidentally shot, whether the other person that was shot was truly attacking folks or intending to attack or not, you know, there's some debate about that.
This third person,
you know, shot the one, accidentally hit the other. Either way, it was tragic for him and his family. And I'm all for peaceful protests and God bless America. You know, speak your peace and be out there in the streets chanting and rallying. I have absolutely no problems with that. And, you know, as Shireen knows, my concern is when it crosses over into violence and destruction of property. But Martin Luther King, part of the reason he was so powerful was his peaceful protests.
Mm-hmm. Nonviolence.
Nonviolence that resulted in a guilty conscience for America.
Yeah.
That drove change.
Thank you for that, John.
I mean, millions of people went to the streets and the vast majority across this country were peaceful. And I'm heartbroken for the loss of life in Utah.
We'll take a short break. Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned, everyone.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on Utah Public Radio. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And we are talking about a lot of really hard things today, John and Shireen. And it gets just as hard with what I'm going to start the second segment with, and that is the political assassination in Minnesota. And I can't imagine what this felt like for those hours where this, you know,
gunman was,
yeah, was
on
loose. And the fact that we now know that he had trafficked to four different locations of elected officials. I've tried to imagine what it would feel like just being an elected official here.
At 2 or 3 in the morning, you know,
dressed as a police officer.
Going from house to house to house, yeah, knocking on the door, claiming he was a police officer.
Yeah.
And
Shireen and I both, as elected officials, I mean, unfortunately, you know, you put yourself out there. And so, you know, this is always, you know, kind of in the background as a possibility, but then you see this come through.
Yeah.
With you know, a former speaker of Minnesota and her husband killed.
And, this is Melissa Hortman.
Then Senator Hoffman and his wife injured. And I guess they're in recovery in the hospital.
What do we say here? I mean, the part of me goes back to your very eloquent, articulate description of the state of our country and world right now, Shireen, and the way that division and a lack of discipline about how we speak and the proliferation of guns leads to a very difficult, dark place
yeah.
where parts of society go to the real extreme political violence world
yeah.
and do, you know, unthinkable things.
Yeah.
The mainstream's not there, but that's not the point. It's the way the mainstream conducts itself leads to, in the extreme, some of these behaviors.
Yeah, totally agree. And it this moment can't go by without acknowledging that he specifically targeted pro-choice advocates. So a whole list of folks who work at Planned Parenthood, healthcare providers.
Democrats,
mm-hmm. people in power in elected office in Minnesota made up his list, right? And it is a radicalization of an individual who there's, you know, documentation of him giving anti-LGBTQ plus sermons as well. These are all interlaced. And I just have to say, like, this is a home to me. I went to college in Minnesota. I spent a lot of time there, have personal connections with people who are on this list. And I will just tell you that the kind of terror that is enacted when folks do this is, it's hard to imagine, but unfortunately, it is becoming more and more commonplace. We are seeing greater mm-hmm. radicalization of individuals, and we're seeing greater violence in this country.
Yeah, John, from the political middle, the way I kind of think about this is, what are we doing to contribute to this? And I'm just saying at large, you know, the American public, what are Utahns doing to contribute to this? And I think of this pot, and you're putting things in the pot, and you put in proliferation of guns, you put in mental illness, you put in a lot of political extremism and division. And what are we—
isolation.
Yeah, what are we putting in that pot that helps? And right now, the thing I would say is get off social media.
That helps stir this up or helps pull back?
No, helps pull it back. Because you have, you know, you have a mix of things in the pot. And I'm trying to think, what do we put in the pot that I'd like to see more religion in people's lives? I'd like to see our elected officials speak up more. I'd like to see modeling better behavior. And this gets right to Senator Lee, our senior senator, who's in a lot of controversy right now. Stories in the New York Times, I think the Wall Street Journal as well. Those yeah. are the two that I read and see, where he, you know, was, as this event was, bad word, live fire, he was tweeting or Xing about Marxism and that the perpetrator was probably not MAGA. And
sharing, yeah, total lies, frankly. Sharing yeah. lies on social
doing
media.
Doing little jokes about A Nightmare on Wall Street, and you know, with the governor's name Walls. And in the process, it's, you know, it's Father's Day. Two kids are losing their dad, and a senator is conducting himself in that way. That's bad stuff
yeah,
in the pot.
I don't know what he's thinking. From my perspective, it wasn't helping the situation, making it worse.
Understatement.
Apology here, because I looked last night and he hadn't pulled down his, you know, posts yet. But
well,
he's under a lot
world
of fire.
Where, too often, you know, apologies don't happen. Apologies, mm-hmm. if they happen, are pro forma, but not really heartfelt. Stepping back, I mean, I think going back to the shooter, I guess he texted his best friend of 50 years. They became friends at 4 years old. And his best friend, the minute he got this text, he knew something was off, something was wrong, yeah. and immediately called the police to deal with it. And mm-hmm. and I don't know what all goes into that, but we are struggling as society, as Americans, to figure out how to engage when we disagree so much.
Yeah.
And we live in the world in which, you know, you flip on the news and it makes it sound like we're at each other's throats
yeah.
on every topic.
Yeah.
And overwhelmingly, that's not the case.
So I'm thinking of leadership here. And what is leadership? That's what I want to put in the pot. You got to set direction. You've got to align people behind a noble, you know, goal. You have to motivate change, inspire
yes.
people. You get you actually plot a really desirable path forward.
Yeah.
Our leaders aren't doing it.
They aren't doing it.
They're not doing it enough to my liking. And I put, you know, Senator Lee in that camp. I put, you know,
every one of our Congress members.
We need more. Because look at what's happening.
So I'll just say there's kind of a naive view of leaders. I agree with what you're describing, what a leader should be. Too often we think our elected officials are leaders. And oftentimes, elected official isn't really leading the parade. He's just seeing where the parade's going and jumping in front of the parade.
So true.
And so it's...
That's so true. But John,
I mean, they describe that if
exception.
You're explaining, you're losing. Yeah. And so that's a sad commentary is
yeah.
we don't really want our elected officials to lead. We want them to just go where we want them to go.
One exception to that, to me, is a U.S. senator. Meaning, if you're elected to a part-time legislature and, you know, you are a full-time realtor and you're learning how to be a public official, I grant them a lot of grace in not having all the leadership qualities that you would learn if you, you know, studied and done things. But by the time you become a U.S. senator, I expect a lot out of you. There's only 100 of you in the country.
Yeah.
You're given an incredible mantle, and you got to rise to that.
I mean, I can't imagine if I were a person who had supported Mike Lee, the kind of shame that I would feel over his conduct. I frankly called and asked, is this what we should continue to expect from my mm-hmm. senator?
Yeah.
Of course, it's just a staffer who says, we don't have a statement on that at this time. And I was like, okay, well, I'll go check Based Mike Lee on Twitter and find out what the statement is. The statement is, this is a person who is fully willing to traffic in people's pain.
Mm-hmm.
These individuals have not been buried mm-hmm. yet. Mm-hmm. And he thinks it's appropriate to take to social media to make fun of it. And all I said at the end was, frankly, I'm sorry that you have to work for somebody who seems to have so little regard for other human beings.
I'm going to predict that Senator Lee sees this and has a recovery, but let's see.
let's hope.
Hey, but related to that, we have James Comey. This happens. It's not just Senator Lee, and let's be honest. James Comey, former head of the FBI, walking along the beach, sees some seashells.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah, arranged like you'll do sometimes, but the seashells were arranged into 86-47. And then he puts it on social media. It says, amazing the things you see.
Right. And then pulls it down. Going, oh, yeah, I didn't know 86 meant
eliminate, kill.
You know, so basically it was saying.
And 47
kill
president.
47. Yeah. President
so he had a little
Trump
more
too.
Sense than Mike Lee, is what we're saying.
But Mike Lee, he sees
like,
it. He's,
okay,
he's
it
putting
a
up
former FBI director, and you, come
you
on,
don't know?
You claim to not know what 86
Well, I think that's
means.
Ridiculous.
But Senator Lee's introducing legislation calling for an investigation into this. So there's like this weird duality here that I'm trying to put my head around.
Yeah. This is the person who stopped making sense.
I come down to this social media is a sickness.
Yes.
It's a sickness that could, in Comey's case, in Lee's case, it gets these dopamine hits that are addictive. And then you do it way too often and you get way too many good feelings about the people that are following you, that are liking what you're saying. And it's sort of it corrupts you.
Well, and you get rewarded if you're quick, witty, biting, you know. Something like that yeah. just, you know, it's not a lot of thought. If you go post a treatise of 5,000 words, nobody's going to read it. But you put in 10 words that are really witty mm-hmm. or biting or sarcastic, boom, you're going to get a lot of response.
I just have to say, now would be a great time for our governor, who wants us to disagree better, to come out and really maybe own the fact that he is, you know, now calling Salt Lake City's flags dumb, really own the rhetoric in his party and really call for real conversations to be happening across this entire state. I would like to see that happen.
Yeah. He's got it in him. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see.
Shireen, set up, we've got Representative Trevor Lee, who's now wants to go after Salt Lake City's Harvey Milk Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Not a surprise here.
Not a surprise. I mean, this is a person who continues to, I think, traffic in some of the, We're talking today about the far extremes of what happens when individuals double down on this deeply divisive, incredibly, I have to say what a waste of time this is, and also just how deeply disjointed it is from how most people feel in this mm-hmm. city. Mm-hmm. And the fact that a representative who really seems bent on, rooting out anything that is LGBTQ or I don't even know. It's hard to follow exactly what he's trying to do. When people in his community have lost healthcare, when people in his community are struggling to get, you know, high quality education, when people in his community cannot afford houses, and you want to come to Salt Lake City and tell us what we can name our streets. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, this is one of those things. Salt Lake City has named various streets after folks that I think have little to do with Salt Lake or little to do with Utah. And so I question it. But if we believe in local control, then there's an element which is, okay, I disagree, but it's not my city, it's their
elected
city.
Officials
so.
Did that.
Did
yeah.
that.
Hey, in our last 45 seconds, I just want to mention the Soapbox Derby. Neither of you went to it.
No, I was in Moab.
This was on Main Street, Salt Lake City.
I didn't even hear it.
I think there were 40,000 people there. It was sponsored by Red Bull, and it was just awesome. All these makeshift little soapbox derbies would go down Main Street.
Natalie, they'd, getting on our soapbox.
Yeah, they'd go over a couple of bumps. They'd go over some jumps, and just the fun and the good-spirited nature of it. That's what we need in this country.
I did see there was a whale.
Oh, yeah. There was a whale. There was a delicate arch. There was...
I miss all of this. I was studying all weekend.
Go to YouTube and look at the highlights. It's worth it. Red Bull Salt Lake City Soapbox Derby.
Yeah. And I just want to say to people, we cannot be cowed into not standing up against this government. Please continue to speak up, raise your voice, and get involved.
Great way
to
wrap
up the program. All around.
Hey, Shireen and John, thanks for the great discussion. Natalie Gochner, our program produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks, everybody, for listening.